This week, Serial Killer September continues with the story of Andre Chikatilo. It's a gigantic story, very well recorded and taken through history. And there's a lot. And it's pretty brutal. And, you know, but, you know, it's a serial killer. I mean, I don't know how many serial killer stories are cute and warm and fuzzy. But this is going to be a long one, so strap in. It's our weird world.
Our weird world.
Welcome to Our Weird World. I'm your host, John Henson. And yeah, like I said, this is the story of Andre Chikatilo, one of the most prolific serial killers of all time. And, you know, here in America, you know, people like John Wayne Gacy from last week, or, you know, Ted Bundy, or, you know, maybe some other people got a lot more press. They're a lot more well known, but they did not kill nearly as many. I mean, killed about half of the people that Andre Chikatilo did. And, you know, I guess, you know, because it's Russia where the story takes place, you know, it's not as mainstream, but it is real. And we're going to dive in right now. Andre Chikatilo was born on October 16, 1936, in the village of Yablokny on the Ukrainian side of the Soviet Union. And at this point in history, the entire region, mainly Ukraine, was suffering from a severe famine in which over 4 million Ukrainians died from the starvation that was made possible by Joseph Stalin's socialism that basically just forced everyone to collect and evenly disperse their crops, which weren't exactly abundant to begin with. Andre and his family rarely had enough food, though I guess they were really more one of the more fortunate ones, to kind of supplement his diet, I guess. Andre often ended up eating grass and leaves to prevent himself from starving to death, and he actually didn't even taste bread until he was 12 years old. So, already setting the stage for really something really terrible. But it gets worse, actually. When World War II began, the Nazis invaded Ukraine, and Andre's father was drafted to the Red Army to help the Russians fight back. But, you know, Andre's father wasn't very helpful, and Andre watched the Nazis drop bombs, set fires, and just shoot a bunch of people in his village. Even worse, he was forced to watch as the Nazis burned his hut to the ground, and he even, you know, the sources are a little fuzzy on this, but it's highly possible that he was forced to watch his mother get raped by a Nazi soldier. That did actually happen. Whether or not he actually saw it happen is up for debate. But that the rape ended up producing a half sister named Tatiana. In 1944, Andre started school and was immediately a target for all of the bullies because he was really frail. He had really bad eyesight, but Andre loved learning, and he read and memorized as many things as he possibly could, and became just a really popular student, at least among the teachers, just for how, you know, dedicated he was to his learning. By the time he was a teenager, Andre was a devout communist, which seems kind of odd, you know, considering that it was, you know, Stalin's communist policies that contributed a lot to his awful childhood. He was also the editor of his school's newspaper. He was the chairman of the Students' Communist Committee. He organized marches where, you know, marches, you know, that's just kind of what you did to be entertained in the Soviet Union, just went on marches. And that was really the high point for Andre's life. That was as good as it was going to get. Because, you know, while he was doing really well in school, he realized, especially as he was going through puberty, that his downstairs wasn't working like everyone else's. He was chronically impotent, which he noticed because he was working around a lot of pretty girls, you know, for the school's newspaper. But, you know, he realized, like, you know, the little tinglies weren't down there like, you know, he thought they were supposed to be. But however, one day, he playfully jumped on his sister's 11-year-old friend and wrestled her to the ground. And as soon as he did that, like, his underwear just exploded. And that is where everything started going downhill. All right. Once he graduated high school, Andre enrolled in Moscow State University, and although he passed the entrance exam, his high school grades were considered too low for admission, and Andre didn't really want to accept that. Instead, he believed that he had been rejected due to his father's war record because his father had been labeled as a traitor just because he was taken as a prisoner by the Nazis, you know, just not in the cold way that Russians tend to, you know, treat people. And since he had been rejected by the big city and a chance to make a good life for himself, Andre instead moved to the city of Kursk and worked, you know, manual labor jobs before enrolling in a community college to study communications. In 1957, Andre was drafted into the Soviet Army and started serving with border guards in Central Asia with and as well as with a KGB communications unit in Berlin. And just before his required service was due to end in 1960, Andre officially joined the Communist Party. And after he left the army, he moved back home and actually found a relationship with a young divorcee. For the next 3 months, the young couple attempted to kind of get it on there, but Andre still having problems getting a boner. And his girlfriend would ask her friends for advice on how to, you know, stiffen him up a little bit. And that led to the entire village, you know, because people started talking, and soon the entire village found out that Andre was, you know, impotent. And, you know, outside of being embarrassing, like, that was a really huge problem because Russian culture, you know, dictates that their men should just be absurdly manly. Like a Russian man, good, strong Russian man should be able to get erection on top of erection. Just, I don't know what that was. But so Andre is totally embarrassed. He's distraught and he tries to hang himself. However, his mother and a group of neighbors found him and pulled him off the noose before he actually ended up, you know, suffocating to death. And still, you know, he's distraught and thinking that no one in the village wants him around. He moves to the city of Rostov-on-Don in 1961. However, things start to look up a little bit. 2 years later, in 1963, Andre gets married to Feodosia Onicheva, a woman who Andre had been introduced to by his sister and her husband, who had relocated to Rostov, you know, in order to be closer to Andre and give him some support. It was basically an arranged marriage because the two got married literally 2 weeks after they met. But luckily for Andre, Feodosia was really understanding of Andre's condition, and the couple actually managed to have a family. And I know you really want to know how this happened, and I am so happy to tell you. All right. Here's the thing. Andre could not, you know, get it to where, you know, it needed to go. So what he did, he would, you know, drop a little goop in his hand, and then he would push it inside of Feodosia with his fingers. and look, here's the thing. If you had told me that, I would have been like, there's no way that works. I feel like it's got to get, you know, pretty far up there. I don't know how a female body works. I don't think anybody really does. But I feel like you got to pew, 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 no, up, all up in there. And no, he just kind of mushed it all up in there. And it actually worked. Not once, but twice. Ludmila was born in 1965 and Yuri was born in 1969. And it just goes to show you that literally anything is possible if you just try hard enough. In 1970, Andre also received his degree in Russian literature from Rostov University, and he quickly found a job as a teacher in the town of Oh My God. I wrote these and then I just didn't even bother preparing because whatever, you know, this isn't a professional show by any means, but Russian words are so hard. All right. But we're going to get through this. All right. He found a job as a teacher in the town of Novoshakhtinsk. Sure. And, on top of his teaching, he also decided to be the school's swimming and wrestling teacher. And, if you remember that little bit about wrestling from earlier in the story, it's not going to go well. 3 years later, Andre was teaching a swim class when he swam up to a 15-year-old girl and he groped her, you know, just out of the blue. And as she struggled to free herself from Andre's grasp, he just, you know, just splattered the inside of his bathing suit. And a few months later, he assaulted another girl that he had decided to just lock in his classroom for quote unquote private tutoring lessons. So he's really turning into a predator at this point. During this tutoring lesson, when the girl answered a question wrong, he would slap her with a ruler, classic Catholic schoolgirl style. When she asked him to stop, Andre grabbed her leg and refused to let go. And when the girl struggled to try to get away, again, Andre just sprayed the inside of his pants. And I mean, you know, it's just what he did. On top of that, you know, he was caught slapping his ham on several occasions in front of his students, but he was never disciplined for any of it because the school feared that they would lose government funding before employing a pervert. Instead, they just kind of either swept it under the rug, or eventually the number of complaints just got so bad that the director of the school told Andre to just resign immediately. And so he did. But because none of those complaints were formally recorded, Andre found a job at another school pretty quickly and actually ended up behaving himself for the next few years. Unfortunately, that school had to take some budget cuts and Andre got laid off. So he moved to another school in the nearby town of Shakti, where he, you know, just immediately started being a trouble, you know, just a difficult, terrible person again. This time, he found a job at an all-boys boarding school, but that didn't stop him from just slinging his floppy little wiener around. In 1978, a 15-year-old boy woke up to Andre's just, you know, squishy little man sausage in his mouth. Just like, I know this is terrible, but like, I have to say it like that in order to not feel so gross. Which I know is probably ironic because the way I say it is probably really like more disgusting than just saying it clinically, but you know, it's how I cope with things and how, you know, I deal with how terrible these stories are. When the boy woke up, Andre ran out of the room, and you know, again, this school didn't want the rest of the country to know that they employed perverts, and so the event went unreported. Later that year in 1978, Andre decided to just buy a shack in the middle of the woods. He didn't really need it for privacy or to get away for his family. He just needed it to murder people because that is where he has gotten to at this point. And so on December 22nd, 1978, Andre sees 9-year-old Yelena Zakatnova. There we go. It's going to turn into an Arnold Schwarzenegger pronunciation. I can see it coming. The girl thought Andre looked like her grandfather, and the two kind of just struck up a conversation. And when the girl said she needed to use the bathroom, Andre invited her to use his shack, you know, or invited her to use his bathroom and took her back to the shack. Once the two got inside, Andre held her down, ripped her clothes off, and tried to rape her. But again, it's really hard to rape someone when your wiener doesn't work right. So instead, he just stabbed her in the stomach. And that's bad enough, but the sight of blood coming from the stab wound gave Andre the most powerful orgasm he'd ever had. And he then choked the girl to death and then dumped her body into the nearby Grushevka River. And here's the thing. Despite traces of the girl's blood being found near Andre's shack and an eyewitness account seeing the girl walking with Andre, nothing happened. Instead, a 25-year-old laborer named Alexander Kravchenko was arrested and actually convicted of the murder, even though this dude had nothing to do with it. And Andre, after murdering this girl, he had an epiphany, and which was, you know, not only was he the luckiest guy in the world when it came to just not getting caught or in trouble for all of the terrible things he was doing, but he realized that his wiener only worked when he was stabbing and murdering women and children. And, you know, that's, you know, I can see how that's, you know, a pretty life-changing realization. And the fact that he almost got caught did actually kind of scare him straight for a little bit. And he was a really good citizen for like 3 years, which in the course of this timeline is a really long time. In 1981, after he lost his job at the school to more budget cuts, Andre switched careers and began working as a supply clerk for a factory in Rostov. And this new job allowed him to travel all over the country to purchase raw materials, negotiate supply contracts for construction materials, and it also allowed him to murder people all over Russia without getting caught. On September 3rd, in 1981, he met Larissa Tkachenko. Sure. Met her at a bus stop, and the two struck up a conversation, and Larissa agreed to follow Andre into the woods to participate in Russia's national pastime, which was, you know, drinking vodka. Once they were in a secluded area, Andre threw Larissa to the ground, ripped her clothes off, and, you know, again, tried to rape her. Well, you know, of course, didn't work because, you know, he's just, you know, a little floppy wiener over there. And so, frustrated, he jammed mud into Larissa's mouth to muffle her screams, and then he strangled her to death. He then mutilated her body with sticks and his own teeth. He bit one of her nipples off, which gave him his, you know, murdergasm, and then he covered her body with leaves and pieces of newspaper and just left her there. 9 months later, Andre ran into 13-year-old Lyubov Lyubov Biruk, who was walking home after going shopping. Why a 13-year-old girl is going shopping by herself, walking alone, whatever, it's different times, I guess. And so when no one was looking, Andre jumped on her, dragged her into some nearby bushes where, again, ripped her clothes off and stabbed her to death. And, you know, again, like the previous two murders, Andre left, you know, the scene with, you know, the old sticky britches and went on about his life without getting caught. Over the next 2 months, Andre killed another 5 kids between ages 9 and 18. Each time, he took his victim to a secluded area, tried to rape them, get frustrated, stabbed him to death, and then involuntarily splatter his baby gravy all over himself every single time. And most of his victims, here's a weird detail. Most of his victims also had their eyes gouged out because he believed in this superstition that the last thing a person saw when they died was forever etched onto their eyeballs. And so Andre thought that, you know, if authorities found the bodies, they would be able to look at the eyeballs and see Andre's face, you know, permanently printed on the pupils or whatever. I don't know. It's weird. That's a weird wives tale. You got to be real stupid to believe that. But, you know, Russia. On December 11th, 1982, Andre sat down next to 10-year-old Olga Stalmachinuk on a bus. She was riding by herself to her parents' home in Novoshinkt. I'm just Jesus. And, you know, again, 10-year-old riding by herself on a bus, terrible idea. Andre convinced the girl to follow him off the bus and out to a cornfield on the outskirts of Novoshakhtinsk, where he not only stabbed her over 50 times, but he also ripped open her torso and cut out her uterus and intestines. If you haven't gotten the picture yet, this is a graphic episode. The next year, Russian police finally realized that they had a serial killer on their hands. But since the state-controlled media didn't really want to give people the impression that things weren't completely under control, the story of all of these murders were never reported. But at the very least, you know, there was a team of 10 investigators who arrived in Rostov to begin trying to solve all of the murders. By September of 1983, Andre had killed 6 more kids. And investigators theorized that the killer was either a group harvesting organs to trade on the black market, a satanic cult, or just a mentally ill person, which, I mean, you know, really narrows it down. Much of the investigation did, however, focus on the thought that the killer was mentally ill. Everyone who had ever spent time in a psychiatric hospital or was convicted of homosexuality or pedophilia was questioned and documented on a filing system. Everyone whose stories checked out were just, you know, eliminated from the suspect list. And this was apparently just a gigantic, you know, list of people in Russia. So, and on top of that, you know, because Russian interrogation tactics were highly effective and probably likely highly inhumane, several young, intellectually disabled men confessed to various murders that they didn't actually commit. On top of that, 3 gay men and a convicted sex offender committed suicide after being interrogated. And within weeks, because of this task force, you know, built to figure out, you know, how, you know, to figure out who the killer was, over 1,000 crimes, including 95 murders, 140 assaults, and 245 rapes were marked as solved, even though people were still getting gruesomely murdered, meaning that the killer that the Russian police thought they were locking up every time was still on the loose. You know, so good job, Russia. On October 30th, 1983, a 19-year-old prostitute was found in Shakhty. 2 months later, the castrated and just Swiss cheese, just full of holes, body of 14-year-old Sergei Markov was found near Novocherkassk. Over the next year, Andrei killed 12 more kids and prostitutes, and this included 29-year-old prostitute Tatiana Petrosian, who brought her 10-year-old daughter Svetlana into the woods to hang out with Andrei because, you know, I'm not trying to shame prostitutes, but generally speaking, not the best track record for good decision making. You know, as you know, the two were hanging out, Svetlana wandered off to go by herself, or wandered to go play by herself, and so Andrei took that chance to kind of try to get frisky with Tatiana. But as was always the case, Andrei couldn't get the erection he needed. And Tatiana, who had actually known Andrei for a few years, laughed and questioned his manhood. Like, oh, you silly Russian man. You're not a real Russian man. You little weird. I don't know. Anyway, and that was the trigger that Andrei needed. And he just shoved a knife into the side of her head. And that, just seeing the blade go in, that's, I mean, just straight from floppy wiener to post. I don't know how you would describe it, but, you know, he soiled himself again. Svetlana, who was off playing by herself, ran back after hearing her mother's screams, who was greeted by Andrei, who was naked and covered in a mixture of her mother's blood and his own glaze, which is just gotta be a horrifying sight if you try to imagine it. Andrei then chased Svetlana through the woods with his knife and finally caught her and just sliced her head clean off. And those two bodies were found a week later. By September 1984, police were able to gather more and more information about the killings. And at one of the crime scenes, police were able to recover semen and saliva samples. But since Andrei actually had no prior arrest record, which is mind-blowing, really, considering everything he's done so far, there was nothing for them to match it to, and the investigation continued to just weed out the homosexuals and mentally disabled people that they had on their suspect list. On September 13th of that year, two undercover detectives noticed Andrei walking up to various women at a Rostov bus station and just kind of grabbing his crotch like, this, you know, whatever his little MO was. And they found that suspicious, so they kind of chased after him. And Andrei was actually arrested at the Rostov Central Market carrying a knife and some rope. And during questioning, police uncovered Andrei's less than stellar past as a teacher, and they also found out that he was under investigation for a theft charge at his job that he didn't actually commit. You know, something had happened while he was at his job because his coworkers hated him because he was really weird, and they actually framed him for theft, and he was under investigation for that. But since they had him in custody, police took DNA samples, and you would think right here, all right, no possible way he's going to get away with this. All right. They have his DNA. They just took it from him. It's going to match, right? No. Andre's blood came back as type A, but the semen sample came back as type AB. And, you know, sure. You know, I don't know if they had to take a semen sample from Andre at the time, or if there's a way you can find that out, you know, just from the previous sample. I don't know how forensics works, and I don't really care to find out at this point. So, despite not being a match to all of the murders, he was actually convicted of the job theft, and he was sentenced to a year in prison. So, hooray, he's in prison for a year, at least, right? No, he gets out after 3 months. Why? Who knows? This is just how these stories go. Once he got out, Andrei found a job at a train factory. And so the next year, he took a trip to Moscow and met 18-year-old Natalia Natalia Poklistova. He strangled her, and then he killed another woman in Shakhty a month later. All the while, police were still clueless. So by November of 1985, the investigative team had grown from 10 people to 29 detectives whose sole job was to find the murderer. And for the first time in Russian history, actually, a psychiatrist was even hired to put together a profile of the killer. Dr. Alexander Bukhanovsky produced a 65-page profile that highlighted the killer as a reclusive man who had a rough childhood and was incapable of having fulfilling relationships with women. Bukhanovsky also believed that the killer was likely married with kids, but also suffered from impotence and could only be sexually pleased by seeing his victims suffer, which is a mind-blowingly accurate description of Andrei Chikatilo at this point. By now, word of the horrifying murders had made their way into the media, and Andrei was following the investigation closely, even though he just kept on murdering people, including 18-year-old Irina Pogorelova. She was found near a farm in Bataysk with her body split open from the neck to the pelvis. One of her breasts had been removed and her eyes were cut out. On top of that, Andrei killed 14 more people over the next 5 years, but not everything was actually so terrifying. Now, instead of being a creepy, murderous father, Andrei Chikatilo was a creepy, murderous grandfather. So, yay! Anyway, meanwhile, the Russian authorities felt like they were getting closer to figuring out who this killer was. On October 27th, 1990, police began placing uniformed officers at train stations all around Rostov because most of Andrei's victims had been discovered near train stations, ironically enough. Then, on top of that, undercover agents would patrol smaller stations with the hopes that the murderer would avoid the larger areas and focus on smaller train stations where the undercover officers were hiding out. But Andrei, that didn't bother him at all. He murdered three more boys in the first 10 days of the operation. Like, he's unstoppable at this point. On November 6th in 1990, an undercover officer watched Andrei walk down a railway platform and wash his hands and face at a well. The officer saw grass and dirt stains on Andrei's coat, and he saw a red stain on Andrei's cheek and what looked like a severe wound on one of his fingers. The officer questioned Andrei, but couldn't come up with a real reason to arrest him, so he let him go. A week later, a body was found near that train station, and so Igor Ryabakov, the officer who had questioned Andrei, was brought in to go over everyone he had stopped and questioned over the last week. So, of course, Andrei's name came up, along with his arrest in 1984 when the initial questioning of all these murders had begun. Investigators, you know, took a little deeper look into Andrei's past and were able to place him in the same location at the same time as many of the reported murders. They learned that all of Andrei's coworkers thought he was just a weird dude and that he had been forced to resign from several jobs due to questionable behavior, namely just choking his chicken in front of everybody. And at that point, they decided to place Andrei under surveillance. On November 20th, Andrei attempted to lure four children into the woods with promises of beer and movies as he went for a walk in the town of Novocherkassk. But none of the children would go with him. Smartly, good job, kids. But police were watching him the entire time, and that was all the evidence they needed. Outside of a cafe there, Andrei was arrested by four different officers. He immediately tried to claim that the officers were mistaking him for someone else and that he'd been wrongfully confused in the 1984 investigation. But as medical examiners looked him over, they found several instances of small injuries that would have definitely resulted from just a struggle with another person. They decided to take another blood test using a different method from the one in 1984, and when the results came back, they realized where they had gone wrong the first time. And here's what's crazy about all of this. Andrei had a very rare medical condition in which blood and semen tests would register as different types. And so while blood tests listed Andrei's blood type as type A, his semen would register as type AB, which then obviously matched the original samples that had been taken at the crime scenes. And that little, you know, medical condition was one of the big ways, other than, you know, Russia's just terrible, you know, police system, was how he was able to get away with all of these murders for so long. So with this information, you know, police interrogated Andrei, but he maintained his innocence, even though he did admit to molesting several children. A week later, Dr. Bukhanovsky, who had written that 65-page, super accurate psychological profile on the killer, was invited to come in and talk to Andrei. Bukhanovsky read excerpts of his profile to Andrei, and 2 hours later, Andrei cracked and confessed to every murder he could possibly remember. He was brought to trial on April 14th, 1992, on 53 counts of murder, along with 5 counts of sexual assault on a minor, you know, just because, you know, they can throw that on, you know, who cares. It took 2 whole days for Judge Akubazanov just to read the indictment list against him. That's a lot of charges. And for the next 6 months, the victims' families had their opportunity to face the man who had murdered, you know, their children and their loved ones. Meanwhile, Andre just completely lost his mind, and he turned the entire trial into a circus. He openly argued with the judge and mocked the family members. And for his own safety, he was even placed inside a steel cage in a corner of the courtroom like a gorilla. During testimony, he blamed his impotence as the reason he tortured and murdered so many people, and even pulled his pants down and just kind of waved his floppy wiener in the middle of the courtroom. He's like, "You'll see this. This is the reason why I kill your kids. Just look at it flop. Look at it flopping in wind." I don't know. Anyway, thankfully, Russia did a good thing for once and sentenced Andre to death. And on February 14th, 1994, Andre was taken from his cell to a soundproofed room where he was shot in the back of the head. Although he was formally convicted of 52 of the 53 murders, it is believed that he killed at least 56 people, which blows a lot of these American serial killers out of the water. And so thankfully, we are at the end of the story. Whew. That was a long episode. I believe that's the longest one we've had so far. So let's wrap it up here real quick and let's see what we learned.
What did we learn?
Number one, Russia, just a terrible place all around. Stalin and his communist policies contributed to Andre's terrible childhood, which ultimately led to a lot of his issues later in life. Number two, what is up with their language and their town names? I can't pronounce a lot of the cities or the names of the people. It's very frustrating. And number three, who knew that you can have a medical condition where your blood type can trick forensic investigators into letting you get away with even more murder than you had previously already gotten away with. Next week on Our Weird World, we are going to finish up Serial Killer September with the story of BTK, Dennis Rader, Bind, Torture, Kill, serial killer who operated in Wichita, Kansas. And it's gonna make you really question your home security system and just a lot of terrible things that that went on there. So thank you if you even have the stomach to come back. I can promise you that the Andre Chikatilo story is another top 10 story, on that Albert Fish level of horrifying. BTK, still brutal, still terrible, not as awful as Andre Chikatilo, if you can even say that. So thank you all for listening. Tell all your friends and keep it weird.